Good afternoon, and welcome to our virtual meeting. It's 1:30 p.m. on October 4th, 2021, and time to reconvene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. In accordance with Governor's Proclamation 20-28.15, we are holding meetings remotely. With me today is Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, our Vice President, Commissioner Tony Olson, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Ann Spangler, our General Counsel, Melissa Collins, our Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board, and Jenny Rich and Lila Wall, Deputy Clerks of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute and turn off the camera on your devices when not speaking. We'll ask for questions or comments on agenda items as each item is discussed. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Some questions can be answered during the meeting, while others may require more time. Please indicate you'd like to speak by clicking raise hand, or if joining by telephone, *9, and I'll call on you to speak at the appropriate time. Are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda, commissioners? Okay, hearing none. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, state and spell your name and indicate where you are from. Comments from the public is item 3 on today's agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So next up, we have item 2, recognition declarations. Our employee of the month for October, Sean Miller. We have Lee Andrews here to introduce Sean.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Lee Andrews, the Fleet Operations Manager in the Transportation Department. It is with great pleasure to introduce our senior foreman, Sean Miller, as October's Employee of the Month. Sean has been at the district for 14 plus years, and give or take, hopefully that's correct, Sean. Sean started April 10th, 2006 as a garage helper. Before that, Sean had worked as a mechanic slash service writer for other auto shops in the area and ran his own tool business for Cornwell Tools. These jobs gave Sean a lot of knowledge in the art of customer service and business logistics. On May 16th, 2006, Sean took a journeyman position for a third shift and worked as a technician on third for the better part of his PUD tenure. Sean later took a bid for the day shift mechanic and would be fill-in as day shift foreman during the COVID pandemic. He served over a year as day shift foreman, bringing great ideas to the position to help with customer relations by providing up to the minute updates and information about what was going on in transportation. Sean has helped create a positive, caring, and servant style type of leadership. So it was only fitting when the senior foreman position opened up that he put his bid in on it. August 16th, 2021, Sean won the bid for senior foreman and has excelled in this position. He makes everyone that calls, emails, or stops by to report issues feel welcomed and listened to. Sean also has very good organization skills. He's got every appointment and scheduled job written down and color-coded on his desk calendar. He knows what is going on in the shop at all times. Sean has definitely taken a lot of stress off of my life here at the district. Just the help he gives me, and you give Sean a task and he does it or gets it done with a smile and a cheerful, I'll make it happen. Sean is also a Safe Start trainer for our Safe Start program. He has facilitated a lot of classes for the district. He has also spent some time on the board of the Joint Safety Team, reviewing accidents and injuries. So please join me in congratulating Sean Miller for the October Employee of the Month. Thank you.
Well, congratulations, Sean. Sorry, I'm getting some feedback. Is it too bad, people, or can you hear it?
I hear you fine.
Okay, great. Well, anyway, Sean, thank you for all you do. You know, I actually was a school bus driver for 5 years, and so I appreciate the working with mechanics and staff that can take your concerns about a little noise or something like that, and not just dismiss them, but to figure things out and to provide customer service within the organization.
Thank you.
I don't know if you can hear me, but terrific job, Sean. You do make life easy around here, and very, very well deserved. So much appreciated. Everything you do.
Thanks, Mark.
Sean?
Go ahead.
Excuse me, Commissioner. Please go ahead.
No, we just kind of chimed in at the same time. I always think, okay, when people have the positive qualities that you have, I often wonder why. Where did that come from? And so I looked at your statement and you said it's, you feel a lot of it is because of all the support you get from the people you work with. And, but before that, was it from your family, maybe partly too, that you're very responsible and kind and considerate of other people and all of that?
I think a lot of it's probably from my Christian background.
Uh-huh.
That most of it probably I got in my adult life when my wife and I started attending church years ago. And I just think a lot of what I've learned there, I try to apply to my daily life. And I got a long ways to go, but it definitely helps give me a positive attitude every day. So
That's so good to know. Thank you very much. I share that.
Thank you.
Well, this is Commissioner Olson, Sean, and you know, you're another great example of the PUD recognizing talent and investing in our employees and opening up avenues for career growth. And I commend you for that. And you know, I say this every time I get to talk about transportation, but you know, I am so darn proud of when I see our fleet in the field. And Sean, your internal coordinating skills clearly are closely attached to this. But, you know, our units look good. And, you know, when they look good, the PUD looks good. And I'm thinking as a customer driving by, you know, that utility cares about its people and its equipment. So that utility must care about me. And I understand a little bit about the transportation operations, and that internal communication is so critical. And I learned that you work third shift. You must be a saint.
Well, I did for 10 years, 10, 11 years. I did. It was
different. Oh, thank you very much, Sean.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, and the way you were talking about communication, it takes multiple people to make that happen. And I really think I almost feel like this is a whole group award, not just for me, because you got multiple foremen communicating, you've got the managers communicating, you have the technicians and garage staff communicating with us, and with the excellent support that I've been given by our office staff. I mean, Mark Stevens at the top, you know, Lee Andrews, Christina Breckner, Chris Urich, and Gianni, their support has, without any of that, I probably don't think that anyone would have nominated me. Just the way the whole shop's worked together the last year and a half has been excellent. I just kind of feel like I'm benefiting from it, to be honest.
Well said, Sean. It looks like Guy has something he wants to say. Guy's hand is up.
Yeah, this is Guy Payne, AGM of D&E Services, and Sean took that senior transportation shop foreman position. He started in August, and the positive feedbacks from the internal customers there's been a constant flow of it from managers, working foremen, employees, just tons of positive feedback, Sean, that you've communicated cross-functionally, really excellent, and just really have jumped through hoops to get the internal customers what they need in a timely manner. So you're really knocking it out of the park, and great job, and very, very well deserved. Just tons of positive feedback. Thank you, Sean.
Well, thank you very much. It means a lot.
Anything else anyone would like to say about Sean or to Sean?
Well, this is John, and I've got to chime in because I am super proud of Sean, and Sean and I share a very similar background, having started at in the garage and as helper. Of course, Sean had a better title than I did. His was helper, mine was unskilled help. So, Sean has so much credibility, so much respect throughout the district. And when he stepped into this senior working foreman role, it really aligned well for him to just do some tremendous things in coordinating and communicating and making things much more effective. So again, just super proud of you, Sean. This is so well-deserved. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I appreciate it from everyone. It's without your guys' support, I don't think any of this would have been possible for the way things have been working in here. So thank you for everything you and Guy and everything have done for our shop, because it's really helped.
All right. Well, everybody, if you would turn your cameras on, and we can't all be in the room to clap for Sean, but we can all wave at him. So, Sean, thank you so much for what you bring to the PD and your excellent customer service. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's the most fun thing we get to do.
Thanks.
And maybe some year we'll get to do it in person again.
Yeah. Let's hope so.
All right. Next is item 3 on our agenda today, comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not on the agenda? Please state your first and last name for the record. So if you want to speak now, please raise your hand. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands going up. Next is item 4, our consent agenda. 4A, approval of the minutes of the regular meeting on September 21st, 2021. B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. C, consideration of certification / ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I will call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay. Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Not seeing any. Are there any questions from you, commissioners?
No.
Just a sec. No, I don't have any.
I have none either. Okay. I'll now call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 5, public hearing, 5A. I'll open the 2020 proposed budget hearing, which is the reason we're having a meeting on a Monday. Mm-hmm. I will now convene a public hearing on the 2022 proposed budget. And I, Scott Jones is here to our CFO to provide us a presentation and discussion. Good afternoon,
Scott. Logan, can you just confirm that's actually the 2022 budget, not the 2020 budget?
Yes, we're opening a public hearing for the 2022 proposed budget.
Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification.
Well, and thank you, Sid, and welcome, commissioners. I'm going to make a couple of comments here before we get started. Sarah Bond, who's our manager of our budgets group, is going to go through a presentation, and John or I might, or others might jump in along the way. But just a couple of quick comments before we get going. I want to bring your attention back to last year. We gave you, as a part of the 2021 budget process, like we normally do, we gave you a 5-year forecast. And, you know, our goal, John and I have talked a lot about this, and Sarah and others, and our goal is really to try to adhere as closely to that 5-year forecast trend line as we possibly can. So as we were going through the 2022 budget this year, a lot of focus was on making sure that we landed. You know, there's cost movements and other things, but we wanted to make sure we landed at those same reserve levels and those general trend lines on costs and revenues. And so I want to really reinforce that point again. You'll see an update of the five-year forecast later in this budget season. We're going to be talking about the budget on and off here over the next 60 days or so. But we really are focusing a lot on that five-year forecast. And so let me get one part of that out of the way really quickly, and we'll talk about this more in the presentation. In that five-year forecast last year, 22 through 26, we included some very small incremental rate increases each of those years. Now I feel pretty strongly, and I think a utility best practice is really to try to do those very small and incremental increases. We don't want to have too many years where we're flat and then have to deal with some very large increases. Right. And so we want to give ourselves a little space here to have some small increases in those forecasts. I'll tell you that all of them were below 3%. In fact, most of them were between 1.5% and 2%. They were very small. The one that we had for 2022 last year, our placeholder was a 2.5% rate increase. After we went through the budget process, we actually dropped that a little bit, and we're proposing now a 2.1. So we've already pulled it back a little bit just based on the updated information that we've got. But for the remaining 4 years of that original five-year forecast, we're still only proposing something between the 1.5% and 2% range. From a governance perspective, the commission is really just going to be asked to approve the 2022 budget and whatever associated rate increase that would entail. And that'll be at the first meeting in December. But we want to get in the habit, and I hope that you'll agree with us, we want to do that within the context of this bigger five-year forecast that we're going to do and that we did last year. And our goal, my goal, is each year to try to trend pretty closely to that and to maintain a high level of consistency with that five-year rolling five-year forecast. We want to give ourselves some room to adjust, to reassess things as they come along. But generally speaking, that's what we're really shooting for here, is a lot of alignment and consistency with that forecast. You've heard me say this before, the financial health of the district, we really are focusing on three things. And my brain works in threes, and so anytime I'm talking, I usually try to boil things down to threes. But for this, for these purposes, we really are focusing on rate strategies, on cost management, and on debt funding opportunities. And when you look at the 2022 budget, you're going to see a mix of all three of those. We've got a very small rate increase. We've done a lot of hard work on cost management. And we do have what we think are some debt funding opportunities for those larger projects and initiatives that we've got. But managing all of those things puts us in some good financial footing. And what we're really paying attention to long term is healthy reserves, good debt ratio coverage, all those things that those outside forces and rating agencies look at to make sure that we're a healthy organization. And we are a healthy organization right now. And there's nothing in the next 1 to 5 years that we're looking at that would indicate that we're not going to be a very healthy, financially healthy organization. So I'm very proud of the work that a lot of folks are doing on that front. So let me just end with a big thank you to a lot of people that helped us begin to pull the 2022 budget together. Sarah and her folks and our side of the house work very hard, of course. But we've got a lot of people around the district that work very hard to try to look at priorities, to look at cost-cutting opportunities, on strategies on labor, and all of that with a very, very hard eye on reliability and a hard eye on safety. We don't lose sight of why we're here. But I really appreciate all those efforts from all the leaders around the organization. And I really appreciate the work that they do. I want to make sure I get that out there. With that, let me hand it over to Sarah. She's going to run through a really a brief slide deck. It's very high level. You're going to get another more detailed look at this over the next month or so. And we've got a lot of time for feedback over the next 60 days or so as we're heading toward a budget approval. So with that, let me hand it over to Sarah. Sarah, you can take it from here.
Got it. Can everybody hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I believe I have control of the slides now, so I'm going to go ahead and get started. So just to kind of build on what Scott said, we put this first slide together to kind of show, just exactly emphasize how many people and how much work is involved in putting the budget together. And really it takes the entire year. If we start in January, we're already thinking about the next year. Early in the year, we look at what happened prior and start to think high level about what we might like to do a little bit differently. In February, we start to do a little more strategy and get ourselves prepared for the process. March and April are when the work begins. And this is where the budget office relies on the really good work that's done by the power supply team and the rates team, the DME planning team. They're the ones who start putting together kind of the bigger long-term forecasts. And during that time, the budget office, we start preparing all of our materials and instructions, and we start gearing up to send off all of the budgets to the managers. So the managers spend a good chunk of their summer working on their budgets in May and June. We go through all of the reviews, June, July, and August, start prioritizing, start trying to come up with our final forecast. September, we spend a lot of the work putting together this presentation and our budget book. And so here we are in October, we're presenting our proposed budget. Next month, as Scott mentioned, we'll have a more detailed presentation that's going to go a little bit deeper into the details of the budget, and then we'll be asking for your approval in December. So all of this, so many people touch the work here, and it's a really fun process. This slide here just gives us a quick glance at each of our three systems. As a reminder, we budget electric, generation, and water separately. Electric has 122 departments that we have to budget for individually. Our total operating revenues that we're proposing are $670 million, which is an increase from last year. Our operation and maintenance proposal is $247 million. Capital is $159 million. And so our total operating expenditures of $670 million. And these are a little bit of increases from 2021. We'll be talking in a lot more detail about all of these in November. Generation system has seven budget departments, and this includes all of the hydro plants, Jackson, Hancock, Calvigan, et cetera. Their operating revenues are about $27 million, and that's what the electric system purchases is purchased power. Total O&M of about $10 million, about $5 million in capital, for total operating expenditures of about $16 million. And their budget is relatively similar to their 2021 budget. Water system revenues in 2022 are proposed at about $14 million. Their O&M is about $7 million, capital $13 million, for total operating expenditures of $15 million. And again, we'll be talking about these in more details in the next meeting. This slide highlights some of the things that are in our budget that we continue to provide directly to provide community benefits to our customers. Obviously, our energy efficiency programs are something we're very proud of. So we continue to fund those programs in the 2022 budget. We're still providing community assistance dollars for qualifying customers. And a large part of our BPA bill is designated specifically for fish and wildlife recovery. These are just a few of the things that we provide, but these are the ones that we've chosen to highlight. This slide, I really like this slide. Just the numbers here sometimes are staggering to me when you think about how much work the district has to do to maintain all of its assets, which of course drive the majority of what we fund. So it's kind of fun finding these numbers every year and looking at the growth. But we currently have 94 substations that we obviously have to build, maintain, engineer them, inspect them. We currently have approximately 369,000 active meters. These, of course, have to have support from our customer service department, customer accounting, meter reading, the meter departments to maintain. Currently have 96,000 transformers, which obviously have to be regularly maintained and replaced. 643 vehicles and other pieces of equipment, which we have to require fuel, maintenance, replacements. The budget for 2022 is about a little over 4,000 new customer connections. And so, of course, there's work to do to get our new customers connected to our grid. On the water side, we've got 403 miles of water pipeline that needs to be maintained and upgraded or replaced. We've got our 5 hydroelectric plants, which require maintenance and upgrades. About 131,000, this number is always staggering to me, wood and metal poles that need to be inspected, maintained, and replaced. Of course, we've got some ongoing programs for those. And then all of our distribution and transmission lines, close to over 6,000 miles of distribution lines, which need to be maintained and replaced. So a large part of our budget is, of course, directly related to maintaining the assets that we have here at the district. I'm going to jump into the electric system. Just a few highlights. Scott's already given you a little bit of information about this, but
hey, we do have Sarah.
Oh, yes.
Did we lose Commissioner Olson?
I can't actually see. I can only see you right now, so I don't know the answer to that.
I just noticed that Commissioner Olson dropped off. I don't know, okay. Commissioner Logan, if you want to give her a second. I don't know if.
Yeah, let's wait a second. And then I see Commissioner Wolf. Looks like she's on there twice.
Oh, okay. It's all right. I was just following on my other laptop, but do you want me to turn that off? It's helpful for me to have it, but I don't want to be. Okay.
I think it's fine. I just noticed it that I'm not sure why.
Double trouble.
Well, there is that.
Well, if it's okay, it's helpful for me to have this, my PUD laptop and my Mac going.
Okay. Allison, are you checking with Commissioner Olson?
I am. And just for reference, I cannot see who's all online when I'm sharing my screen. Do you see her at all, or is she completely gone and just, or is it just black?
Let me check.
She's completely gone, Allison.
Yeah, she's gone.
I'll call her. Thank you. Sarah, you'll have to click again.
No problem.
And sorry, Commissioner Logan, I didn't mean to interrupt the flow
good
there.
Good catch.
I was looking up there, and all of a sudden, she literally vanished right in front of my eyes. And so
I have 4 screens I'm using to look at the presentation and all of us and the individuals and the attendees. And so.
Commissioner Logan, do you want to take like a 5-minute break so we can track her?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Why don't we come back at 2:05? All right, it's 2:05 and we are back.
Okay. I'm actually going to, if everybody can hear me, I'm actually going to go back slide. I just wanted to point out, we just noticed inadvertently that total operating revenues is actually supposed to be the $707 million, not the $670. So I just want to make sure that that was pointed out to be clear.
Could you repeat how much it is, please?
It is $707 million. And that, I'm going to talk about that just on the slide that I'm just about ready to cover, but it was just noticed that that was a mistake here. So I just want to make sure that was pointed out so it was clear that operating revenues and expenditures are not the same.
Sarah, I think the other point there too, though, is that the purchased power accounts for the other part of our costs, right?
That is correct. Yes, this is not a full cost walk into all of the costs. And I probably should put purchased power on there, and I will do that next year.
Yeah. It's if you're trying to do the math there, the big piece we're missing is purchase power, but we're going to hit that in just a second when Sarah goes back to electric.
Okay, back to where I left off here. So here's the number that we should have seen. But anyway, what this is just showing the comparison of our revenues from the 2021 budget to the 2022 budgets. And as Scott mentioned, there is a 2.1% rate increase in here. And he explained a little bit about some of the strategy behind our rate increases. We have continued to see some upward pressure on some of our costs, including some recent supply chain challenges, as I'm sure you all are aware of. We are forecasting our increases to remain well below what we project the inflation to be. Scott already talked a little bit about the small and incremental rate increases that we're planning, and we haven't had a general rate increase in 4 years. So that's a little bit about what's driving our energy retails number, as well as a little bit of load growth that we'll talk about in November. Energy wholesale sales is up quite a bit from the 2021 budget. A good chunk of that is going to be offset by higher market purchases as well, just seeing higher rates, higher prices out there in the market. And we'll go into detail into the some all of the assumptions behind this in November. On the expenditure side, you'll see that we're up a little bit in most of our categories, so relatively stable. Purchase power is up slightly. The majority of this is because of the market purchases. Our BPA costs have actually been held flat from the 2021 budget, and this was largely due to a lot of the work that our power supply staff has done to negotiate with during the BPA rate case proceedings. And you also notice that our operation and maintenance number has been held very flat as well, just a small uptick. And again, as Scott mentioned, that's just part of what we've gone through in the budget process to really prioritize projects and do everything we can to keep our budgets as flat as possible.
Sarah, on the previous slide, you showed that our revenues were going to be up $50 million from last year, or from this year to next year. And on the next slide, you show expenses only being up $10 million. So in light of the rate increase, what's the difference in that? Is that capital cost?
Yeah, largely the difference is going to be capital, which I'm going to talk about in a second. And I think when you see that number, you'll understand a little bit about where some of our expenditures are going to be coming from. But operating expenses themselves have been relatively flat.
Okay, thank you.
In fact, that'll great segue into the next slide where we talk about capital. We are definitely, we've got some larger projects coming in the next few years. And that's definitely where we're seeing some increases in our budget. You can see it's almost a $60 million increase from 2021. One of the largest is what you guys are familiar with. I haven't briefed significantly on this, is the Connect Up project. This is the first kind of big year of the multi-year project. The investment in 2022 is to start the installation of some new meters, working on the network, and we're going to be funding this primarily through bond proceeds. Another, just kind of some of the ongoing projects that we have is maintaining our infrastructure. We've got some large substation projects. We're continuing the Sky Valley switching station and the Twin City substation, two large projects, as well as just the kind of the asset programs that I talked about a little bit earlier in the presentation. So we've got continuing funding for our wood pole and underground cable replacement programs. So total funding for all of these is about $53 million. And then you actually were just briefed a little bit today, this morning, on a little bit about the North County office. So 2022 is going to be the year that they start the site work and the initial construction of the project. So we've got about $14 million budgeted for that project in 2022. So that's what I have on the electric system. I'm going to move on to the generation system unless anybody has any further questions. If not, hopefully we'll address them in our first meeting in November. So the generation system, you can see their budget is actually just slightly lower than 2021. As a reminder, this $27 million you see here, this becomes part of our purchase power costs. Basically, the electric system purchases all the power produced by those projects and becomes part of our power portfolio. What makes up that under energy sales numbers, there's a few different things. Some of it is the operating and maintenance expenditures. And one of the bigger projects that we wanted to highlight that's happening in 2022 is the continuation. Well, I used to say it's continuing the Jackson shutdown that was deferred for 2021. It's probably one of the larger projects that we've got in the Jackson budget. So we included a little bit of information here and even some really, I think, some interesting photos about the work that's being done. That's going to be done in that project in 2021. There, if we look at the generation system capital budget, it's actually down from 2022. Did choose a couple projects to highlight. They're going to be replacing some cone and valves at Jackson. They've got about $1.2 million in the budget to replace some of the cone valves. And I think we talked about this last year, if I recall. This is a continuation of that project. We're also continuing work on the Qualco biogas generation system. So we've got about $300,000 in the 22 budget to continue our project there. And then in 2022, they're actually beginning the design of a renewable energy learning center at Woods Creek. So this is a new facility that's going to provide on-site learning and renewable education for the public. So this is going to be phase two of the project, which is going to be beginning the design and permitting and landscaping. So that's kind of a fun project to talk about here. Water system, just a few highlights here. The 2022 water budget, so it was for third, they are seeing some increases from the city of Everett and some other O&M pressures. They are expecting a increase in the city of Everett by about 1.4%. And currently, and they're still, this is still a placeholder at this point, a general 2.75% rate increase in early 2022 to help pay for some of that, as well as some other O&M cost expenditures that they're seeing, which are some of the costs are coming from electric system and then just other inflationary pressures similar to the ones that the electric system is seeing. So you'll probably be hearing more from the water department about this in the next few months.
Yeah, Sarah, let me, I want to give Brant an opportunity to jump in here if he wants to, but I just want to reinforce the point that this, this is a placeholder. There's a lot of strategy discussions still happening with Brant on just some financial planning stuff. And so I want to make sure that we just say out loud that the 2.75 is what we've got in there now. Brant, I know, is planning to, and I see Brant popped up here. I don't want to steal his thunder, but I know Brant is planning to circle back and talk with the commission a little bit too, just more specifically on water. And so there'll be more to come there. Brant, hopefully I didn't step on your toes there, but I want to give you a chance to speak up.
Yeah, no thunder stolen. So we've been talking to the board quite a while about a lot of things kind of culminating this year. So one, our water system plan is finishing up. So we looked at our 20-year capital improvement plan. The decision to move forward on the AMI project for water, that was a big decision. And then we've been doing a rate study with our financial consultant, FCS. So we did get some recommendations back from FCS. They're looking at about a 2.75% revenue requirement, but you know, I really want to get together. I think we have a meeting tomorrow with Scott and his group, just to really go through that analysis, go through the financial model, ask any questions, make sure that Scott and his team and Brian Booth are comfortable with it before we even come to you. And it's, again, it's just a placeholder. Scott likes to say there's three things that can be a driver when you need new revenues, either rates, you know, so increase rates, look at additional debt, you know, or just kind of ongoing good financial management. And I think we try to do a good job of the financial management. And now we're kind of looking at, you know, all the O&M pressures and kind of that split between potential revenue needs or rate increases and potential debt. So that's more to come. But again, this is just a placeholder in the budget. If that makes sense.
This Commissioner Olson, Scott, I do, is the 2.75, is the 1.4 from Everett on top of that, or is that included in the 2.5?
No, so the water utility doesn't have an automatic pass-through of okay. Rates. So actually, our last rate increase was 2018. We've had several rate increases from Everett. I think, believe last year's, I want to say it was like 3.9%. So they're culminating, you know, on top of each other since our last rate increase. So we don't have that automatic pass-through. So the 2.75 does include the increases in wholesale rates.
All right. Also. Thank you.
Welcome.
Yeah, we've absorbed several City of Everett rate increases.
That's correct. A lot more to come. So, I mean, not rate increase, but a lot more information to come. You know, again, sorry. I mean,
I wrote that one down.
Sorry for the interruption there, Sarah. Thank you.
No. It's totally fine. Great conversation. Last slide on water. Just really quick, just talking a little bit about their capital budget for 2022. It's up a little bit from 2021 budget, about $13.4 million. A couple of things that are also going to have some dollars for the Connect Up project, because they've got meters that they need to start working on replacing. So that's going to begin in 2022. And then they're going to be continuing the Warm Beach improvements. So this has been continuing for a few years. The 2022 budget includes $3.3 million to continue working on the Warm Beach system. And some of that is going to be offset from loans and grants as well. And of course, they have all of their main replacement programs as well. And so we'll talk a little bit more about those when we get into the larger conversation next time. So that's all we have for today. So like Scott mentioned, just kind of a quick general overview of what's coming. As a reminder, we are accelerating our schedule from what you're used to seeing a little bit. We're planning on doing the budget presentation in one meeting on November 2nd. We used to split it up into two. So now we'll be doing it in one meeting. So we'll be doing that on November 2nd. We will be discussing any potential changes that we may have with you on November 16th, and then we'll be asking for you to approve on December 7th. So we'll be moving things up 2 weeks from our normal schedule. So that's what is going to be coming next.
Okay. Are there any comments from the public regarding the proposed budget? Please raise your hand. Not seeing any hands going up. Are there any questions or discussion from you, commissioners?
No, very interesting.
Commissioner Olson, I'm saving mine up today. So Tony's message is be afraid, be very afraid.
Well, I guess I'll save mine up, but don't be afraid. Okay, then I will call for a motion to continue the public hearing on the 2022 budget.
I have lost my script on my screen. Could Tony please do it, Commissioner Olson? Could you read that,
please? I move that the public hearing on the 2022 budget be continued to Tuesday, November the 2nd, 2021. At 1:30 p.m. at 2320 California Street in Everett, or at a publicly noticed video conference if appropriate.
Okay, thank you. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 6, items for individual consideration. 6A, consideration of a resolution fixing the date, time, and place for a public hearing regarding the proposed change in the boundaries of Snohomish County Public Utility District Commissioner Districts. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay, we have Ann Spangler here available to answer any questions. First, I'll see if there's any comments from the public regarding the resolution. If so, please raise your hand. I'm not seeing any hands going up. Do you have any questions or comments, commissioners? I know we were briefed on this at our last meeting.
I have none.
I'm sorry, no, I have none either.
Okay, I have none. Thank you for all the work on this, Ann. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 6B, consideration of resolution amending resolution number 6028 and ratifying the district's amended retail electric rate schedule 20 EV effective October 1st, 2021. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay, we have Brian Booth available to answer any questions. First, I'll ask, are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? So raise your hand. Not seeing any hands going up. Are there any comments or questions from you, commissioners?
Nope, I have none. I have none. We are amending a resolution that was previously approved as a part of a public hearing. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. My understanding is this rate schedule was just left off the change to it. Is that correct, Brian?
I guess my point was we don't need another public hearing.
Yes, that's correct to both questions.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, if there's no further questions, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye, motion carries. Next is item 7, our CO General Manager Report. Do you have a report for us today, John?
I do. Got a few interesting things to share with the board. First, from our facilities generation, power rates and transmission. Last Sunday, the PUD released water from Comac Dam to provide a recreational opportunity for whitewater enthusiasts. We had a near record turnout with 62 participants. Kayakers hiked in along the Salton River Canyon Trail and boated nearly 15 miles of the Salton River. The boaters are adventurous and are thrilled by it and thankful for the exhilarating experience. The district times these releases carefully and conducts them in a way that also stimulates the upstream migration of salmon. Mm-hmm. We conduct as many as 3 of these releases annually to meet obligations and license. It is a highly coordinated internal effort between natural resources, Jackson's operational staff, and power scheduling. Also, Young's, Hancock, and Callaghan Creek, Young's Creek, Hancock, and Callaghan run-of-the-river generation projects are back online after seasonal maintenance, including major rewrites of the Hancock-Callaghan control software to improve operator controls. The power supply hosted several clean energy implementation plan customer focus groups during the week of September 27th to augment prior residential and business surveys and in-person workshops in order to get more customer perspectives incorporated into the upcoming integrated resource plan and clean energy implementation plan documents. In addition, a customer open house will be hosted on October 21st from 6 to 7:30 to receive additional customer perspectives on the CEIP effort. The district executed the agreement for phase 3A participation in the resource adequacy, having received authorization from the board on September 21st. Regional response and participation has been robust, with early expectations that phase 3A will have significantly more participants than anticipated in the cost share agreement. This higher participation level should reduce cost share obligations per participant and result in cost savings for us, for the PUD. In our customer and energy services update, Governor Inslee's moratorium on disconnections for non-payment officially ended on 9:30. Extra communication efforts, along with media editorials, alerted our customers to the end of the moratorium. This changes little for the district, as our focus has been and will remain centered on promoting awareness and prompting engagement with our customers who are behind and helping them maintain manageable balances. While we're not reverting back to our prior disconnect process in full, we will identify accounts that have made no efforts to contact us or attempt payment in the past 18 months and use a more concentrated effort to make contact, which could result in disconnect for non-payment if necessary. In these situations, we will have flexible reconnection processes where needed. The seasonal moratorium will begin in mid-November, and customer service has successfully been engaging with our customers throughout proactive phone calls, letters, emails, doorknob tags to inform our district payment plans. Income qualified discount options and ways to partner with the agencies for assistance. These efforts in customer service has directly resulted in 650,000 customer payments for just the month of September and a total of almost 8 million since last October. With the additional communications by us, our local utility peers, and the media coverage regarding the end of the disconnect moratorium has led to increased call volumes for us. For example, this past Wednesday and Thursday saw a 61% increase in call volumes over the same day averages throughout this period or this prior year. Our CSRs, as usual, are doing a fantastic job and currently working hard to put many customers' fears at ease as we speak. On the assistance fronts, we've been moving the needle in our community through strategic partners with our social service agencies. Our partnership with the Energy Assistance continues to get stronger for the benefit of our customers. Between November 2020 and September 2021, we were able to help 2,100 customers get connected with over $1 million in energy assistance grants. As we look back, perhaps the most remarkable was the partnership in August of 2021 when EAP reached out asking for our help in allocating their remaining funds as the 2020 winter funding period officially ended on August. And they had excess grant funds that was about to go unused despite the real customer need. We rolled up our sleeves and helped reach an additional 490 customers with over $350,000 in grant monies, meaning roughly one quarter of the total EAP grant funding ended up being delivered in August due to the intense work and partnership. What a way to close out the year and start the 2021 energy assistance funding year. And lastly, through our partnership with Workforce Nahomish starting on August 27th, 2021, we've been able to connect 380 of our customers with a whopping $295,000 in federal emergency rental assistance. And we are just getting started. Also, as the board knows, the Flex Energy pilots launched on October 1st, and all meters were installed in record time. So way to go, meter department, but also there was just a tremendous amount of work by a number of different departments, accounting and others throughout the organization to really get the Flex Energy pilots stood up and ready to go by October 1st. In our HR group, HR is working with the continuous operations team to begin preparations for the COVID testing as required by the recent presidential mandate. Specific rules have not yet been released. However, the district is discussing various options and how they may be implemented at the district, including on-site testing and tracking. Long-term care opt-out begins on Friday, October 1st, and the Washington Cares Fund exemptions webpage. HR benefits team will try to take a screenshot of the process and post it to Snow Web HR page so employees can use that as a guide. We will communicate to employees to apply for the exemption as soon as they can. In late October, the flu shot and COVID vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, will be available on-site at the operations center and the electric building. And the HR benefits team is preparing for the upcoming benefit open enrollment beginning Thursday, November 4th through Wednesday, November 17th. Information will be communicated in highlights, the district daily, and on the Benefit Central open enrollment page. And lastly, and we will talk about this in just a little bit during the board governance calendar, but we would like to postpone the discussion of the board owner linkage by just a month for the next commission meeting and return to the second meeting. It was originally scheduled for our next meeting in October. And we'd like to push that into the second meeting in November. And the reasons are, over the past year plus, we've had some discussions in our commission meetings about the board owner linkage and really the expectations and or the thoughts on what staff needed to bring back and for the board to review. And I think through those discussions, we've been able to identify there may not be complete alignment on the definition of the board owner linkage, and more even importantly in my mind is the purpose of the board owner linkage. So what we would like to do we would like to meet with each individual commissioner and do a separate interview around or based on some key questions to help us ensure that we can come back with some basic alignment on what the board owner linkage is, what it needs to be, its purpose, and be able to draft a better strategic plan for the board owner linkage for the board to review and discuss again at that second meeting in November. And we can talk more about that when we get to that part of the agenda. That's it. Any questions or thoughts?
Questions for John or comments, commissioners?
I think that's a good plan, John, to come back to have interviews so we clarify what each, how each of us perceives who the owners are and what that means.
Well, that's Commissioner Olson. I concur with Commissioner Wolf.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, I agree as well. I do want to say again, you know, our customer service folks have just done amazing work during this pandemic. And imagine, you know, all the calls they're getting now and all the work they've been doing proactively to try to reach out to those that owe us money. It's just, it's really amazing customer service. So really appreciate that, how they've done. I mean, they've really shined. Lots of departments have shined during the pandemic, but they're one that really comes to mind as really having, been transformative.
Yeah, they really have done a great job. I appreciate those comments, and as well as many groups, all of the groups across the district. And I did spend it. We have spent quite a bit of time talking about a lot of those things. And I know I spent a lot of time at a lot of different points or updates regarding the accounts receivable, aging accounts receivable, and some of the other things going on in customer service. But my perspective is that's some of the information that the board needs to hear, needs to have. It's critically important to us as a business and as we continue to try to serve our customers and our community. So we want you to be well informed on what's going on. It does affect the PUD, both certainly from a customer service standpoint, a community standpoint, and a financial standpoint.
I have a question, if I may, regarding the distribution of funds. Is that done in combination with the county department, of social services? Or do we, we get the funds from the feds and then do we distribute it, or like for the rental relief and things like that? Because I've been reading I've been reading a lot about money left on the table and has not been spent, has not been distributed, and people are hurting. So just curious about how that is done. Who does it? How does
it? I will kick that to Pam, but that point on unused funds is one of the areas that I think we can be very proud of our customer service folks. Because they've really worked hard with the county and the agencies to make sure that we can provide that help to folks. Pam, you want to, you can answer Commissioner Wolf's question better than I can.
This is Pam Bailey, AGM of Customer and Energy Services. And traditionally, the agencies all tell us what they will allocate to our customers and which customers receive the funds. What we're really proud is that working with our legislation team, Kim's team, and Jeff Feinberg, we've really been assertive in putting our foot in the door at the agencies and really trying to help guide the process of where these funds go and how quickly we can get access to them. We're sharing the accounts with them, the customers that, the number of customers and delinquency, the months that they're delinquent. So it's really been helpful. We're not at a place yet where they're just handing the funds over to us to allocate it to the customers, but we have such a good partnership with each one of them that we feel pretty confident that we'll be able to move quickly as they get funds released to them.
Great, thank you, that's helpful.
Any other questions, commissioners, or comments on John's report?
I have none.
Hearing none, we'll move on to item 8, commission business. 8A is our commission reports. Are there any reports, commissioners?
I have none.
No, I don't have any either.
Okay, I don't either. Next is item 8D, our commissioner event calendar. Are there any changes to the commissioner event calendar? Now, John just recommended one, and I think we all agreed. So we're making that change. I've been reflecting on our conversation we had at our last meeting about sharing in the new employee orientations, that everyone had an interest in doing those. So I was thinking, starting with the next one, we should start rotating that if that works for everybody. And I thought, since Commissioner Wolf and I have done it most recently, that Commissioner Olson would be next, followed by Commissioner Wolf. Does that work for everybody?
I think that's a great idea. I was going to ask about it, and thank you for bringing it up.
This is Commissioner Olson. I'm fine with it.
Okay, good. Anything else on the governance planning calendar? Commissioner event calendar.
On the wrong one, I guess.
I got us on the wrong one by talking about John's.
Yeah, but we accomplished something, so that's
we did.
Great. Mix it up some more.
So anything else on the event calendar, those events that we attend?
I don't think so.
Commissioner Olson, any on the event calendar?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry.
Okay. Now, I'm sorry. Next, we'll move on to item 9, the governance planning calendar. Are there any changes other than the one John recommended to the governance planning calendar?
I do have a question on that. There was a comments made about changing the number of budget hearings. And we're showing two in October and in do any of those disappear with the change in format that you're using?
No, those will stay the same. Commissioner Olson, okay. It's just accepting the budget a meeting earlier than usual, but okay. Everything that's set on there will stay. It just in general, when they began it, the dates were changed, but what you see is what it will be.
All right, thank you. And then the discussion was to move the board owner linkage to the 19th then?
Mm-hmm. Right.
16th of November.
16th. Okay. November 16th. Yep.
And excuse me, when do we have discussion of the 5-member board again? When does that come up again? I don't have the calendar. I've got 3 screens and I can't see. I don't have that one. So
I don't think we've made any motion to bring that back up again. I don't think we had any outstanding questions.
Well, we didn't really settle it, did we? I think that's something that we do need to get back to.
Well, I guess I'd have to listen to the meeting. I thought at the end of our discussion, we did say that at this time we weren't going to continue looking at it. I may be wrong, but that's what I thought I heard. And we all three agreed to it.
No, I don't think that I agreed to that. I beg your pardon, because I think it is still something that we need to be thinking about seriously. And I think part of it is we were waiting for the census and the new division, you know, the new boundaries for the 3 districts. And that's part of the picture. But so sometime, you know, in the near future, like maybe early 2022, I hope we can get back and look at that.
Well, I would ask Ms. Commissioner Olson, first I would want to check on our previous discussion on this. Perhaps the clerks can look that up and then send us information on it, like a transcript or something. Because I left that discussion thinking that at least at this point in time, we had determined not to move forward with it. And I haven't heard anything from President Logan, so maybe I'm just misremembering.
No, I agree. I think we had made no plans to move forward. I'm trying to remember if any of it had to do with the board owner linkage. It seemed like those were some of the points that were brought up. But I can't remember. I just remember that we made no plan to bring it back up again.
Mr. Logan, in the August 17th minutes, when it was discussed, I do show that it was determined that the board would no longer continue to pursue this topic.
Okay.
According to the rules on minutes, unless we have a unanimous vote, there should be some explanation of why, if there was dissent, or if somebody didn't agree, there needs to be some record of what the issue was. And so for me, I don't think
Commissioner Wolf, we did listen to that recording a couple times, and all three of you agreed to that.
Agreed that we didn't need to further discuss it?
Correct, including yourself.
But there was no vote, Commissioner. No. We did not vote on it. It was a presentation, and then we agreed at the end not to take any further action.
On that.
Anne has her hand up also. Sorry, go ahead, Commissioner Wolf.
I was just going to say, maybe we agreed no further discussion at that time, but that doesn't mean that we would never come back and deal with it and discuss it.
No, because it doesn't.
Being the second largest PUD in the state, I believe, and with three members, that is, I think, not a good situation, frankly, although, I mean, I just think the fact that two out of three can just do anything they want is not a good situation. We need a little more input, a little more diversity in representation, membership. So I'm not content to just say, oh, well, it's fine. We'll never think about it again. I don't recall thinking that or feeling that or saying that, but it's possible or quite likely that I said, okay, at the moment, no further discussion. But I certainly didn't mean to close the door on it forever. So not to be argumentative or confrontational, but I do think it's not a closed issue for us. So.
So if the commissioners agreed to bring it back, I guess my question would be, what would you want to see brought back to the board?
Well, maybe I think Anne wanted to weigh in here. I think I heard that Anne wanted to weigh in.
Commissioner Logan?
Yes, Anne, go ahead.
Yep. I was only going to add a comment that I think in the discussion that we had, some of the interests that were behind looking at a five-member board related a little more closely to the board owner linkage. And that's what led us to say, let's have the discussion about the board owner linkage and conclude mm-hmm. that there's nothing more to talk about now on the five-member board. So that was what I was going to add is context about how we talked about the board owner linkage. And, you know, if something comes up during that board owner linkage discussion that prompts the board to want to revisit, then I think, you know, you can do it later at that time or decide that, no, everything's the way, it's fine the way it is. So I don't know if that's helpful, but.
Yeah, I remembered something about the board owner linkage plan and that, but I didn't remember as specifically. So thank you, Anne.
Well, I'll go back and, you know, listen to it again, but that I do think that it did relate to board owner linkage and also the new boundaries and, you know, all of that. But I think that the public has indicated, members of the public have indicated to all three of us at different times that they would like to see a larger board. And so that's, I mean, I firmly believe that the public has a voice, should have a voice.
Well, they do. In fact, they're the ones that the law allows a process to take us to a five-member board. So the only process that does exist in the law is the process that they have. It's not our process, it's their process. So
are you saying that we should just step back and wait for the public if there are people in public who want to expand the board, that they're the ones who have to just start the process, even if they don't know about it?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's not our process to start.
But don't you think it's our responsibility to educate the public that there is a process and that there is a way to do it? Who should do that?
Well, we did go over that when Anne gave the presentation. The last presentation was about the process that it would take to go to a 5-member board.
Right. And I know it's a vote. I mean, it's a petition process, certain number of votes, as I recall, percentage of the voters, right, Anne?
Correct. And I think Melissa's point is that the process is part of the packet and was covered in your public meeting. So to some extent, we've already put out information about what that process is.
And this kind of does relate to the board owner linkage, because there should be ways for us to communicate more broadly to the 360,000 customers that we have. And if two or three are on the call, which maybe they were, maybe they weren't, that is not really educating them, in my opinion. So anyway, at this time, I won't say any more, but I think you know my position on this, that I strongly believe that the public needs to be well educated on this and that they should know how to do this if they want to pick up the ball and go with that. I think it's our responsibility to help educate them. After all, they own us.
Are there any other changes to governance planning calendar, commissioners?
I have none.
Okay. Is there any further business to come before the board this afternoon?
I have none.
All right. Hearing none. It is now 2:49 p.m. and our meeting is adjourned.